Welcome back. Our guest this week is Secretary of State Joslyn Benson in trouble with the president. Our lead story, the governor starts to reopen the state in the midst of this virus as it continues. On the OTR panel this week, Kathy Gray, Emily Lawler, and Rick Albin. Sitting with us as we get the inside out, Off the Record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michiganswroadtotop10.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to Off the Record. Let's get right into it. The governor making some major decisions this week about reopening part of the state in some areas. And Emily, what did you make of this story?
Absolutely. I think for a lot of people, this is sort of the sign of hope that they've been looking for. For Memorial Day weekend, for the Traverse City area, for farther up north, this is huge. This is just huge news that they'll be able to recapture some of the traffic that they'd normally see on their busiest days. And of course, on a little bit of a different schedule, a little bit of a restriction as to what can happen and what can't. But overall, I think this has been a real sign of hope for people even downstate who maybe aren't planning to travel up north, but see it as a sign that maybe 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, that there's at least an end in sight to the restrictions they're living under on a daily basis.
Rick, did you get the sense that she was all in on this or that she was still had some reservations?
No, I think she's got reservations, but I think that she also took a look at this in consultation with a group of experts, Merck and others that she's been meeting with. And she understands a couple of things. One is that a lot of the data that she has been talking about for all of these weeks has really started to move in the right direction. Some of it is beyond flattening the curve. So I think that there is a certain economic reality that suggests you have to be able to be prepared at some point to get back to work. But I think maybe the most important part about what she announced in this past week is it kind of gives us a roadmap for what the rest of the regions may look like as they start to reengage. And Northern Michigan is really going to kind of set the tone. They'll be watching those numbers, as Emily said, over the next 2 weeks. I think after they give this experiment, and to some degree that's what it is, a couple of weeks, then I think other regions may start to get some of the same ability to start to gradually reopen. Not to be lost in all of that, Tim, was I think a couple of significant moves when the governor said that auto showrooms can reopen with appointment, retailers can start having appointments, you'll be able to have non-essential medical, dental work done, even your pets will be able to go back to the vet and presumably groomers. And so I think those are all steps that we've been waiting for what seems like a very long time. And if that is kind of the roadmap for the rest of the state, that gives those businesses a chance to get ready and be ready to get up and running sooner because they know what the rules will be.
Kathy, it was interesting to me that she sort of buried in her announcement, oh, by the way, we may have to extend that stay-at-home thing. She said it, but she certainly didn't lead with that, did she?
No, absolutely not. And one other thing that she's going to be allowing people to do is to gather in groups of 10 or less, which is a big thing for the Memorial Day holiday. She said, go out and grill a burger, but when you go to the grocery store to buy those burgers, only send one person. So that was in there too. And the extension of the stay-at-home order is going to be for places like gyms and salons. Unfortunately, I think all of us are dying to get to our salons. I think that will be coming, but I think it's going to be more towards mid-June.
She's open to a little criticism because her dog Kevin can get a haircut, but she can't, and other people who want to can't either. But we got to move quickly here. Emily, let's talk about that flood in Midland. Who's at fault here?
I don't think we can really say that with certainty at this point, but I think that, of course, everybody's looking to point some fingers right now, not at themselves, of course, so we'll see how that all plays out. But, I mean, just a tragic situation to have on top of a global pandemic, obviously hitting Michigan extraordinarily hard. And, you know, you hate to see those thousands of people evacuated from their homes, and in some cases commingling. Some of the sites that they're housing them at are at high schools, which of course we've been avoiding gathering groups of people, and now some of them are displaced and being forced to gather because of the flooding.
Rick, what's your take on all this?
Well, I think that the thing that struck me is that a few weeks before the inauguration, maybe 2 weeks before, I talked to the governor, and she was talking about the responsibility she was about to undertake. And she talked about the unknowns, those disasters, the things that can happen that you aren't necessarily prepared for. And she said, those are the things that keep me up at night. And I couldn't help but think that she's got multiple things now that can keep her up at night, trying to deal with this, what is going to be another big economic blow. There's going to be a lot of costs associated with this flood in Midland, as well as the economic considerations from the pandemic. Forget for a minute the health concerns, which she's been focused on for the past 2.5 months. It seems like there's an awful lot out there for the state of Michigan to deal with right now.
Kathy, weigh in here.
Well, I was in Midland on Wednesday all day and talked with a woman who had been evacuated to Midland High School from her senior citizen living facility. She's 101 years old. She was really sharp. And all she could talk about was, I don't know what my city's going to look like when I get back. Her apartment complex is right on the riverfront. And so the water was lapping up on the first floor. She's up on the third. But the one thing that I really took away from her is the last thing she said to me was, I don't like 2020 very much right now. And I think that a lot of people are feeling that. And like Rick said, the cost of dealing with this is going to be pretty astronomical on top of the economic tsunami that has hit the state with COVID.
All right, on the court decision, the governor won one this week, but this is winning the battle, but the war continues, Emily, on her power to issue emergency orders. The Republicans said, you don't have it. The court said, yes, she does.
Yeah, and I think even in oral arguments, the judge acknowledged that this issue would probably go up to the Supreme Court at some point. I think everyone's expecting that. And there's a question as to really how timely this can be, since the governor's starting to roll back some of those provisions in the stay-at-home order issued under the state of emergency. I question how much of an impact this will really have in the end, kind of regardless of the outcome.
Rick?
I think the battle will go on. And while Emily is right, it really might not have a practical impact in this case. I don't think the legislature is just going to say, okay, we're going to move on. I think they're going to take every opportunity they have to get a bite of the apple when it comes to reducing those emergency powers, even after this pandemic is over.
I think you're spot on. They do not want to, from a legislative standpoint, go through this same kind of thing again. All right, quickly, let's talk about VP. Is Governor Whitmer on the short list or not, Kath?
And she's on the list. She's absolutely on the list. I'm not sure if she's in the top tier anymore. Obviously she's on national TV quite a bit. She's doing a lot of appearances. And she said earlier this week that that she has talked briefly with the Biden campaign. But I still think that there are others who have kind of leapfrogged over her. Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Stacey Abrams, Amy Klobuchar. And I think that she's up there, but I'm not quite sure if she's in the top tier anymore.
And don't forget Ms. Demings down in Florida, Orlando. Rick, your take on the VP thing for the governor?
It's impossible to know what that list looks like, and I don't think that the Biden campaign knows. We're still a ways out. We don't even know what the convention is going to look like. There are a lot of open questions out there. She's definitely on the list, but she, like everybody else on the list, says they're not running for vice president, but I think they'd all take it.
And Emily.
Yeah, I think that's a sage analysis from Rick there. Part of running for vice president, I think, is denying that you want to be vice president for the first stage here. We seem to still be in that stage. The experts I've talked with have said that the best thing that Governor Whitmer can do right now, if she does want to be vice president, is to do a really good job navigating Michigan through a pandemic. I think that she's going to have to work with the Republican-led legislature to really accomplish that in a meaningful way. Especially as it comes to things like, of course, addressing this combined $6.2 billion budget hole over the next two fiscal years here, or current fiscal year and next fiscal year. So I think that, you know, when she says she's focused on Michigan, that that's true to some extent, or to a huge extent, because what she does here in Michigan elevates her, or could elevate her, on the national stage.
All right, we got to get to our interview pre-recorded with Secretary of State Joslyn Benson. Welcome to our program now, Secretary of State Joslyn Benson. How you doing, Madam Secretary?
Good morning. How are you?
Hanging in there. Kathy's got the first question. Let's get at it.
Good morning, Madam Secretary. You've gotten a lot of national attention this week because of your decision to allow or to mail out absentee ballot applications to all Michigan voters. This is something that the local clerks have normally done. Why do you think it's important that the state take this on as well?
Well, yes, a number of local clerks have reached out to us and indicated that they wanted to do this. They don't normally do it. Some do, some don't. What was important for me is that everyone got an equal opportunity to access their right to vote by mail, that every registered voter got one, not just those that lived in communities that had a clerk who was proactively going to do this. We also know that lots of groups, advocacy groups, probably both political parties, would send out the application. So it was important to me that every single voter got one and got one at the 75-day window so that they'd have the full time to return it and get their ballot and return it, and that we'd have that kind of level of equality throughout the state so that where you live or what list you may be on doesn't determine whether you get this application.
Secretary Benson, obviously more people could vote by mail if they do pursue this absentee route. But as you look ahead to the election in November, knowing that the vaccines, I think I'm hearing 12 to 18 months out, there won't be one by then, most likely. What is your biggest concern at the polls on Election Day?
Well, of course, we don't know what the situation with the health situation is going to be like in August or November. We're hoping for the best, but preparing for us to run an election much like we did in our May 5th local elections just a few weeks ago, which was quite clearly in the height of the pandemic for many communities. And what we did there was have precincts available, one in every jurisdiction. And the precincts were set up in a way that allowed for social distancing and ensured no crowding. And we also provided PPE for each of our election workers, masks, gloves, hand sanitizer, and wipes, and additional masks in case voters showed up without one. So we're prepared. We've got a blueprint based on what we successfully did May 5th in a handful of communities throughout the state to scale that up statewide if we need to. Hopefully we won't. But you know, ensuring that as many people at least know that they can vote by mail regardless of the health situation and where we are in August or November is our goal right now from a voter education standpoint and from a health and safety standpoint.
Secretary, what is the cost associated with this for two elections in August and November? And is that coming out of your normal operating budget? Or are there extra dollars being allocated? And if so, from where?
Yeah, we've been grateful that the federal government has really invested in our states, not as much as we need them to, but certainly significantly. We received $11.2 million in the most recent allocation, and we still have funds left over from a past allocation under the Help America Vote Act. So we're prioritizing the use of those federal funds, many of which have to be spent this year or else we return them, to cover the additional costs of operating an election during a pandemic. Those costs, of course, include encouraging people to know they can vote by mail and consider doing that, which this mailing does, but also involves providing additional tabulators and machines to increase the efficiency of processing those ballots if they are mailed to our clerks. And other capacity issues, as well as providing PPE and other safety and health and safety requirements for our election workers, and potentially recruiting more election workers if needed, all of which we've been doing. We did for our May 5th election, and we're prepared to do it for August and November if we need to.
Madam Secretary, a two-part question. First of all, is there a specific part in the election law that gives you the authority to do this on your own?
Well, I'm the chief election officer of the state of Michigan, as stated in our statutes, and there's a state constitutional requirement that says every voter has a right to vote by mail. So those two things combined with the fact that really anyone can send these applications out, they're available on our website, and that we received federal funding to help us inform voters about how to exercise their rights and operate an election during a pandemic. All that combines to give me not just the authority, but frankly, the responsibility to ensure every citizen throughout the state of Michigan, every registered voter, has equal access to information about how to exercise their right to vote during this pandemic and to give them the certainty that their right to vote will be protected and accessible for them.
Why didn't you consult with the legislature to see if they wanted you to do this?
Well, I have been working with the legislature throughout my tenure to consult with them and collaborate with them on a number of things that we need for our elections this year, including expanding the processing time that clerks have to process a ballot sent through the mail prior to counting them on election day. So where we're able to find common ground or collaboration, we hopefully can do so. I personally feel we could get so much done if we worked together and collaborated, but it's, as you know, a hyper-partisan, politicized environment in Lansing that we're operating under. And so we work together when we can. And to me, you know, I've got to make executive decisions about what's best for all of our voters, separate from partisanship, separate from the political games that often are, you know, the norm here in Lansing, and just move forward with what we need to do that's best for our citizens.
Yeah. So in other words, Secretary, you didn't go to them because you knew you would come up with a goose egg, right?
No, I would say I've got limited time, and I've been working with particularly the quadrant leaders throughout this process, worked with them extensively through the planning for the May 5th election, during which we also mailed absentee ballot applications to every registered voter in a jurisdiction
which they
with
didn't
the local
like.
Election. Well, but we've been talking with them. And so, you know, I'm aware of their positions and, you know, hopeful that we're, like I said, we can find opportunities to work together. We'll find them. But I have a responsibility as the chief election officer for the state of Michigan to do my job, and I'm going to do it.
Kathy.
You got the attention of President Trump this week, who tweeted about this. And initially said that you were sending out absentee ballots, which is not true. You're only sending the applications. But is there a possibility in the future that you could be sending out absentee ballots instead of just the application?
Only if a registered voter affirmatively requests that a ballot is sent to them, do we have the ability to send them a ballot under Michigan law. So that would be and that's very clear. And so that's why, you know, sending these applications now is really, in my view, important from a voter education standpoint, but also to ensure, again, that we're delivering equal information and equal opportunity to participate in our elections, to vote by mail, which every citizen has a right to do. So that's our focus. Then, you know, ballots will be requested by voters over the next several months, and then clerks will send ballots based on those requests.
But can those ballots be sent out if someone is on a permanent absentee voter list without having to go through the application first?
You know, if someone's on a permanent list, they get the application automatically without having, you know, or without, they're on a list to always get an application, and then they can return that application and get the ballot sent to them. So under Michigan law, and unless it changes or unless there's an executive order, a court order to the contrary, a citizen or a voter has to affirmatively request, even if on a permanent list, to get that request to receive their ballot by mail. And frankly, what this enables us to do is plan ahead also statewide to get a sense of who is going to be requesting those ballots in August and November, to know as soon as possible on our end so that we can have that data and use that to plan and prepare for our clerks to both send out those ballots 40 days prior to the election, which the law requires, but also prepare for the incoming of those ballots and the processing of them come election day.
You've described so far working inside of current election law. Now that you've been through the May elections in a pandemic, we're going through the November and August, of course, elections in a pandemic as well. Do you picture yourself coming to the legislature with asks for law changes that would make voting safer or better?
Yes. Yes. I mean, I can't say, I've talked to probably 30 clerks over the past 48 hours about various things. And the number one thing I have heard from clerks in townships with 400 voters to clerks in cities with, you know, several thousand is we need more time to process our ballots. Right now, Michigan law only says you can't even begin processing those ballots until election day. That is not enough time when you're dealing with, for some of our localities, three times the number of ballots sent by mail this year as opposed to voted in person at precincts. So we need our legislature to update our laws appropriately if they've done in 18 other states. And then we also need to consider, you know, other things that will make it easier for our clerks to handle this influx of ballots sent through the mail that we can anticipate under any circumstance, and certainly now. But that's really at the top of my list of priorities. We also think are concerned about ballots that are sent in postmarked by election day but received after. And so we want to talk with the legislature and collaborate with ideas on how to make sure every valid ballot is counted. And then we've also been working to ensure our military voters and their spouses and their families have an opportunity to return their ballots electronically if they're serving overseas. As many of you know, as a military spouse myself, when my husband was serving overseas, his ballot was not returned. It was bounced back, and it was really frustrating and heartbreaking. So I've testified before our legislature asking them to extend and allow military spouses, their families, and military service members stationed overseas to safely and securely return their ballots electronically to ensure they're received on time and counted. So those are my priorities for the legislature. We've only got a few months, especially on that first piece on ballot processing, to get it through. But we have to if our clerks are going to have all the support that they need to administer our elections efficiently.
So when you talk about more time to process these ballots, then do you move back the time that you send out the request for the ballot and send out the ballot? And so do we effectively end up with a longer period for early voting? Is that essentially what this is?
No, it's just meaning that when someone sends in their ballot, let's say 20 days before an election or a week before the election, those ballots begin to be opened and the signatures are checked to make sure they're valid ballots and that everything is ready to go so that as soon as election day comes, you can just feed those ballots into the machines and they're counted efficiently and securely. Right now, again, the processing can't even begin until election day itself, even if you just give clerks the option of starting the Monday prior to election day, as many have asked for on both sides of the aisle. That gives them a whole extra day to begin this processing of, for some clerks, twice or three times as many ballots as they've typically had to process in the past. It gives them more time and ensures on election day, they'll have more time also to handle more in-person voting issues that may arise. And again, it's in place in 18 other states. We don't have it here.
You wouldn't,
but it wouldn't change anything else.
You wouldn't tabulate those ballots. You would only get them prepared to go into the tabulator.
Correct. Yes. I think what's important and what our clerks have asked for is more processing time to ensure that signature check is done, to ensure the ballots are ready to go and bundled appropriately and ready to put into the machines. I visited the processing boards for absentee votes in our March 10th election, our presidential primary, and I saw a lot of these clerks have a very efficient operation in place. They get things done quickly and smoothly. We're working to provide them with more machines so that they can count even more ballots more quickly. And we're recruiting more election workers to help give them more support. So we're trying to expand their capacity on election day itself to process all these ballots and count them centrally. But if they had even just one extra day, I think it would make us all breathe a little bit easier and help us more efficiently deliver accurate results to the nation in November.
Did you use the word stupidity and cruelty in your response to Mr. Trump?
No. I don't think I typically use those words anyway. So, no, not that I know.
Well, do they?
Someone say I didn't.
Do those words apply to what he said about you?
I think wrong and inaccurate is what applies. I reminded him what my name was. He got the law wrong in Michigan and he got our actions wrong. So that's what I work to do to correct. I don't take to name calling. That's not my style. But as a former law dean, as a lawyer. I like accuracy. And so I was simply correcting the president on misinformation that he had tweeted. That said, it also is a reflection of what I will do when any entity seeks to misinform our voters about their rights or what's going on in Michigan. I'll just correct them with the facts and with the truth.
Do you think Republicans are afraid if we have too much mail-in voting that more Democrats than Republicans will vote, and that's the real hidden agenda here?
Well, you have to ask them that, but there's no data that suggests that. In fact, in our May 5th election, we saw this vote by mail opportunity, this right embraced by both voters on both sides of the political spectrum. And also, that's precisely why we mailed applications to everyone throughout the state. We don't want to favor one group or the other, one county, one organization over the other. We want all voters to have an equal opportunity to participate in our election, regardless of what side of the aisle they're on or who they're voting for.
All right, finally, when are you going to reopen your offices so everybody can go back in and stand in line?
Well, when they go back in, they'll be able to make an appointment and avoid crowding or standing in line. So they will be open by appointment only in the coming weeks, and you can expect more information coming in the next few days on that. But they'll be open imminently, and we look forward to welcoming everyone back by appointment only.
Can we have a date, June 1st?
We're tentatively, I would say June 1st would be a goal that we're hoping to meet. But we have our workers coming back in next week to begin setting up our offices to have social distancing guidelines and other things in place and sanitize them to make sure we're ready for the public. So I would anticipate by June 1st, we may be able to start having appointments open in many of our offices. And, stay tuned. We'll give more clarity and specifics in the days ahead.
Very good. Madam Secretary, thank you so much. Be safe, and we appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to see you. Good to see you all.
All right, next week on this program, we hope to have an interview with Governor Gretchen Whitmer. And until then, I'm Tim Skubick for everybody here on Off the Record. Have a safe weekend.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by the following. Business Leaders for Michigan has a strategic plan to make Michigan a top 10 state in the nation for jobs, personal income, and a healthy economy. Learn more at michiganstoptop10.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan Public Television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.